Welcome to the Troy Martinson Group Real Estate Podcast. Troy Martinson and the members of his group are licensed real estate agents in the state of Minnesota with the brokerage REMAX Results. They can be found online at sweethomeminnesota.com. Now, here is Troy Martinson.
Welcome to the show. With us in the studio today, as usual, at Minnesota Podcasting is Marshall Saunders.
Hi, Troy. How's it going?
Really good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good. Today, we're here with Jason Reed, the duplex doctor. How are you doing, Jason?
Super. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for being here. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how long you've been in the investment industry and a little bit about yourself and your business, Jason.
I started investing myself a little over 20 years ago. Okay. I've been a realtor that specializes in investment property for 18 years. I sell more 2 to 4 unit buildings than any other agent or any other team in the Twin Cities. And it's been that way every year since 2012.
So you know what you're doing.
Yes, supposedly.
With that kind of time in the industry, I'd love to hear maybe a story or two about some of the best investment strategies or maybe properties that you've seen maybe personally or, you know, helped a client with.
Things change over time. Mm-hmm. When I first started, the prices were high. One of the ways that you needed to actually make an income rather than, you know, just kind of break even, which a lot of people were experiencing in the early 2000s.
Sure.
Was to find a way to add bedrooms, because if you can add bedrooms to a unit, a lot of times you can add, you know, a significant amount of money, either in equity or especially on a monthly basis, you can increase your rent. Mm-hmm. The market has kind of went full circle where that was a strategy back when I first started, and it's coming more into vogue as far as a way to actually utilize properties differently.
Sure.
There's, you know, there's a fair number of them that don't work that way because you add a bedroom and then you kind of chop up the floor plan and make it less livable. Yeah. But I do see a lot of times that's a way that and even it's an opportunity because virtually every realtor will list a duplex, triplex, or fourplex, but most of them are not thinking of it as an investment or thinking the same way that an investor does. So a lot of times they miss on things like that where there might be a room that's off to the side that maybe is currently being used as a dining room that would be better utilized as a bedroom. And you could add, say, $300 to $400 a month in income just from that change.
Sure.
I know some of the units that are built in like the 1920s, 1910s, 1930s, before air conditioning, they'll have pretty elaborate either front or back sunrooms or built-in porches that oftentimes lend itself into a nice bedroom.
Correct. Most agents are selling stuff on the emotional feel of a property.
Sure.
Whereas when you're more into the investment field, it's more of a logical way of looking at it and thinking, okay, what's the best way to make more money with the same property?
Sure. Sure. So add a bedroom, you add $300 a month or whatever, now you're adding to the gross value of the property.
Correct.
Really. With that said, what's one of the best stories you got for an investment property like that?
One of the best ones I saw was a property was listed as a fourplex with 4 one-bedroom units. And they're really large units. Then there were, you know, it's basically almost like a bowling alley type, you know, the lane. I call them like a bowling lane where it's just all one open space.
Sure.
But the front, as Marshall was talking about, the whole front of the property was a sunroom. And you already had a dining room and living room leading to it. So it made sense to make that into a bedroom. And the person that bought it was able to add 4 more bedrooms in the property, and the cash flow went up by about $1,400 a month for the entire building, which was a huge difference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One other thing I tell people, if you're looking for an investment property, one of the biggest things you can do is look for properties that are under-marketed mm-hmm. because you'll see a lot of times agents will take really bad pictures or mm-hmm. a property won't look that good from mm-hmm. the photos or just a lack of photos. Most people will say, I'm not even going to go look at that one. Mm-hmm. That's a huge mistake because, number one, you have less competition because mm-hmm. there's less people. Most of the people are acting the same way where they're sure. going, eh, I'm not going to look at that.
Right.
A lot of times that person is going to not realize the potential of the property right. and what could be done with it to actually make more money.
How about something grossly overpriced also where people are like, well, that thing will never cash flow. Right. Why would I even bother? But then you get in negotiations with this owner. It's been on for a while. Maybe they're like, you know what, let's just get this deal done. I've seen a lot of transactions happen that way where people wouldn't bother looking at it because it's overpriced.
Definitely.
Same kind of situation, yeah.
What type of financing do you look at when you're buying a duplex?
It depends on if you're going to owner-occupy it or not. Mm-hmm. If you're owner-occupying a property, you can get in with FHA for as little as 3.5% down or, you know, say 5% with conventional. And then the beautiful thing with that, too, is that a lot of people will qualify for different programs where they get down payment assistance. So I've seen times where people come in with a very small amount of money, mm-hmm. you know, even maybe $1,000 or $2,000 to get in when they use one of the down payment assistant programs to buy it. Hmm. If you're an investor, you're going to pay anywhere from 20 to 25%. You know, if you're not living in the property as a down payment.
In your opinion, what's an acceptable ROI on something as far as an investment on a 2 or a 4 unit that would be like, hey, you'd bring this to one of your good investor clients and say, you know, let's say 8 or 10% is pretty in the stock market is pretty average or, you know, like a safe return. What would be, in your opinion, like a net return on a property that you would think is a good, you know, a good property?
I would say your cash on cash mm-hmm. return, and that's something that I would mm-hmm. look at more so than, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people.
Overall return, you'd look at cash on cash.
Yeah. I would say you're going to be, I mean, depending on the area that you're in, you should be somewhere on the very low side of, say, 6% mm-hmm. up to maybe 12% on the high side.
Sure.
You know, the return of say 10 to 12 is going to be a lot more difficult. And it's usually if you find something like that, it's something where it's a value add where you have to do something to actually
get it to that point.
Yeah.
And real quick, would you just explain what you mean by cash on cash?
So let's say your down payment mm-hmm. is $20,000.
Okay.
And you're, return is essentially taking that into consideration where
sure.
$20,000 is your initial down payment.
Cash and out then, of pocket.
Yep. And yep. then whatever you're receiving on a yearly basis mm-hmm. as your net would be divided by that $20,000 to get your cash on cash return.
Sure.
So you're just
Makes sense. You're
looking at, you know, my initial investment is $20,000. How much am I receiving each year to, you know, that
interest initial on your cash?
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And the beauty of that investment is you're leveraging your money. You know, obviously the $20,000 that you're putting into mm-hmm. it, you're getting at least say like a $200,000 property. So mm-hmm. you're, you know, if there's appreciation, which I don't always – I don't tell people to bank on that.
Right,
but
right.
if you have appreciation, you're leveraging $20,000 into a $200,000 investment.
Right.
And you can do that in the stock market, but it's really risky.
That's what I was getting at, yeah. Because you can buy a lot more
yeah.
in real estate than, you know, putting $20,000 in the stock market.
Also, on cash on cash return, you got to figure out other things like your closing costs when you buy it.
True.
And also any cost to fix up the property. You know, like if you go in and you make a 2-bedroom into a 3-bedroom, you got to figure out the cash. If you're not financing it, of course, you got to figure that cash outlay. So, you know, it's really your total amount of cash out of pocket mm-hmm. to bring this up to speed and then how much you can get from it from there, figuring the cash on cash return. I personally, when I'm talking about investments, That's the only number I care about.
Yeah.
It really is. Of course, I got to care about rental rates and all that sort of stuff sure. that lead into
it. But it all boils down to that one number. Yeah.
You know, everybody talks about cap rate. Cap rate. I could freaking care less about cap rate. It's like the one number that I throw out immediately. Mm-hmm. I understand its meaning and I understand its use, especially in taxes and how people overall value like an entire portfolio.
Sure.
But when I'm looking at a duplex or a single family home, cap rates are useless.
Useless.
To me. Yeah. All that matters is what sort of cash on cash return mm-hmm. can I get on this property?
Mm-hmm. Do you see the way rents and values have gone up so dramatically? Do you see still a lot of good opportunities out there in the Twin Cities or?
I do. I've been doing this long enough where a lot of times people will come to me, other agents will come mm-hmm. to me and say, I don't know what to do with this property. You know, can you sell it? Or, you know, this is what the person wants for it. And, you know, if they get that price, they'll be happy to sell it. And, you know, you see opportunity there. A lot of realtors are out of their comfort zone and just their experience
sure.
in duplexes, triplex, fourplex. They don't really know what they're doing, but they'll still list a property.
Sure.
And you have to take advantage of that because I a lot of times I'll see people under list a property and or maybe the photos aren't good and the information that they put online sure. isn't good. And if you're not out looking at everything, mm-hmm. you're going to miss out on a lot of those opportunities.
Sure.
I still think a lot of buildings are underutilized too.
Sure.
And
wasted space or just, you know, like you said earlier about the bedroom thing, like, hey, we could easily make this into a bedroom and raise the rent or.
Yeah. And a lot of people that we're helping are owner occupants where mm-hmm. they're buying a property and maybe they're utilizing, you know, if it's a single person or a couple and they don't mind having a smaller unit, they can actually live in, say, an attic mm-hmm. space that's, you know, smaller, but they sure. could utilize it as, you know, like a third unit in mm-hmm. a duplex where it has three separate units, but sure. it essentially has always been used as a duplex.
Sure.
Or they could create a third unit. The city, Minneapolis has gotten a lot lighter on what they, you know, are allowing. And actually the 2040 plan, they are going to loosen the zoning and allow people to utilize a duplex as a triplex, mm-hmm. which, you know, I've had dozens of people that have worked with me where they've bought a duplex and they've been able to, instead of having the overwhelming mortgage payment, they're able to live in a duplex mm-hmm. or even a duplex that they turned into a triplex mm-hmm. and they don't have a huge mortgage like everybody else. And sure. it's allowed them to do a lot of stuff. I've got clients that travel a lot more.
Sure.
I have
somebody's always there. The neighbor's there to you know, keep an eye on stuff while they're traveling. And yeah,
I think if more people understood how easy it is to do, they would start with a duplex
sure.
and then get their dream home, say 3 to 5 years later.
Sure. What advice would you give to a young early investor? Maybe somebody that maybe doesn't even own a property yet. I mean, what kind of advice would you give to somebody just getting into the market right now?
It's something to have some patience for one, but mm-hmm. also mm-hmm. when a good deal comes to you, one of the biggest things I've seen novice people make a mistake on is there's a property that is a good price and they try to chisel down just a little bit more. And then the owner gets frustrated with them. And then before they accept that offer, another one comes in and then they lose out on that situation.
Sure.
I would go into it with the idea that you want to look at about 5 or 6 places to start mm-hmm. with, just even if they don't interest you, just to see what the market's like, get a better feel for what the pricing is. And then when you do see a good deal, you'll actually understand, you know, because you've seen how these other properties are priced.
Sure.
So many people are afraid of like doing renovations to a property. And I mean, like if the foundation is messed up, that's something you might want to avoid if it's your first
sure,
time. But
sure.
There's
always going to be something, right?
Yeah.
You get into these properties, a lot of them are older. There's going to be plumbing or electrical or, you know, maybe some roofing issues or insulation. There's always something.
And
that's the opportunity, right?
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
I think the biggest one that the more I think about it, the biggest mistake I see people that aren't, you know, astute at doing this is they look at the tenants as if they're, you know, going to be there forever.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you can use that to your advantage where I mean, I've had tenants that are just completely horrible to the people that walk through the property. Mm. And then everybody kind of gets this bad mindset with tenants. And it's like, well, these people aren't going to be there forever.
Right.
You know, and that's something that I think a lot of times people attach the tenants to the property and think, okay, oh, you got terrible tenants. I don't want to buy that property. And and that's what everybody else is thinking too. And that's...
Well, and from the tenant's point of view, who knows what they've been through with the current owner.
Right.
You know, maybe they are kind of, you know, maybe they are kind of jaded because they've been treated poorly or ignored or maybe some repairs. And then all of a sudden now it's on the market and they're like, oh, geez, I got to get my dog out of here.
Right. And it does happen.
Yeah.
And so. I think the biggest thing is their fear. I mean, I've seen that with
fear of the unknown, right?
Yeah. They don't know if they're going to have to move right away. Even when you tell them, hey, legally you have the right to stay there because you have a lease.
Sure.
They don't. They don't really trust a lot of times that that's the situation. So then, you know, you've got this uncertain situation and you got people marching through your house all day long. They tend to get a little bit edgy.
Yeah.
And a novice person should look past that and say, okay, the tenant doesn't necessarily have to stay in this building long term if I don't want them.
Personally, I own, you know, several investment properties and have over the last 20 years. And when it comes to doing your taxes, boy, I think there's just a huge advantage to owning rental properties.
Depreciation.
So, yeah, depreciation. you know, even if you don't do some of these upgrades and repairs personally, even if you're hiring it out, boy, it's nice to be able to use that against your taxable income. So maybe we can talk a little bit about that.
You know, I mean, several of my clients have multiple properties that they've – you know, the depreciation basically allows them to make income and not pay taxes on it. And
because they can write those improvements and interest and things like that off of the, counteract that. Yeah.
Yeah. And the depreciation basically works where, let's say you buy a $150,000 building and land's worth $50,000. You're able to write off that $100,000 over 27 and a half years. And obviously there's certain things that you can qualify or not qualify for. There's some people that don't qualify for that write-off. But basically to me, it's icing on the cake. You know, if you're making a decent return on investment and then you add the depreciation and then you also add the fact that you're paying down the mortgage – those all add to what you're actually making as a return.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't necessarily count on the other two because I think they're just kind of an additional thing. The key is, you know, if I'm just first starting out, I want to make sure I have enough cash flow where it's not – I've known people that buy properties and they make a very small amount of money and then something comes up and they think, oh, I'm only making $100 a month. I hate this.
Yeah. Gets them in trouble. Maybe they get
– Yeah, or you have to pay for something that maybe is a little bit above and beyond what your budget is to fix things up. You know, you want to make – the cash is king and your cash flow is the thing that's most important. I still to this day just kind of cringe when somebody comes to me and says, I just want to buy a place and I want to make sure it breaks even. And I'm like, I just immediately pause and say that if you do that, you shouldn't, this is you something shouldn't you do just that. Shouldn't yeah. even consider.
My time is free. What's a challenge you've had, Jason, in the investment industry, maybe with either in sales, like trying to maybe help a seller that's kind of out of range or out of reality, or with a buyer that's maybe their expectations are out of line. What's one of these things you've kind of struggled with and how did you overcome it?
I guess you can answer that. There's two different ways. So with the seller, I don't know what the psychology is behind this, but a lot of times you find that people will look at anything that's sold in their neighborhood and think that theirs is exactly the same condition as the best one that's sold in their neighborhood.
Right.
And they, for some reason, even though the last 30 years, all they've done is put caulk on the toilet and you know, like maybe changed like some vinyl flooring and then that was it for 30 years. And it's, Right. They still think it's worth what the neighbor is.
Right. And that put $200,000 into it in a remodel job.
Yeah. That's a difficult one to overcome. Sometimes you have to bring them out to other properties and say, hey, this is what the other properties are like that are fetching this kind of price. Mm-hmm. I would say the hardest thing with buyers is they tend to like look at stuff that's on a national basis. Like they'll go to, say, a Bigger Pockets or something like that, and they'll see that somebody's receiving a 20% cash on cash return in Kansas City or Cleveland. And it's like, you know, those numbers work there.
Sure.
But they don't hear, you know,
this is the Minneapolis market, you know.
And some of those markets, you might actually see the property depreciate in value over a 10-year period of time. And then, you're making money on it, but, you know, you're losing it on the back end because it's worth less than what you paid for it.
Jason, you were telling us some stories about, you know, some kind of hands-on interactions that you've had with tenants. Do you manage your own properties? Do they all know who you are?
Yes. I mean, the tenants have always known who my wife and I were. And what I would suggest for someone, at least for their first property or maybe their first couple, is to actually manage it themselves. I know it's wonderful to think, okay, this management company is going to take it over and I'll never see anybody. But the key, I think, is to actually understand what that company should be doing for you. Plus, you get a better feel for what that property is like.
Sure.
So you can say, okay, I can see that this is, maybe this thing is eventually going to be a problem, like a furnace or something like that. And you get a better feel for it. The percentage that you're going to pay a management company often will really kill your cash flow.
Sure. And they're not going to look into things like you just said, like, oh, I know in the winter this corner of the living room gets cold and these pipes freeze.
Right.
You know, when you're there for a couple of years and you get it, hey, this summer we need to get a plumber in here and take care of this problem.
Yeah, and one last thing I'll say about management companies this is about 3 years ago. I was out at a property that we were selling, and one of the units became vacant, and the seller wanted to have someone rent out the unit. And I knew they could get $1,500 for rent for the unit. It was all day long.
Sure.
And the management company came out, and I heard them talking, and they said it was $1,300. And after the tenant left, I said, you know, you can get $1,500 for this. And this was not a small, like one-off type management company.
Sure.
And
the guy said, one of the bigger ones, yeah.
He said, yeah, I know, but this is what we set it at. And if you think about it, the management company, if they only show it one time, they're making great money because they generally get paid 1 month's rent.
Sure.
What would you rather do? Would you rather show it once or try to get market rent where you might have to show it 2-3 times, maybe 4?
Yeah.
They were actually undercutting what the rent was because
they wanted to rent it quick.
Yeah. Yeah. It made their job easy, which is horrible for the client.
But
you really don't know that as an owner until you've done it yourself.
Especially if you're out of town.
Yeah,
you know, if you're absentee owner, you don't know. You're just like, well, the check came.
Right. Looks like it to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's really easy to rent something right now. I do it in an open house format where you say, hey, we're going to be here. If there's a tenant living there, it works better for them too. And I say 12 to 2 on Saturday is when we're going to be here. There's going to be a bunch of people here. The tenant tends to clean the place up a lot better ahead of time. And then you're not doing multiple showings. And a lot of times the other thing you're doing is you're creating urgency because there's 5 or 6 groups of people going through at the same time.
Sure.
They're going to feel like they have to do something, which is exactly what you want to do. Yeah, and I've actually seen it where tenants try to outbid each other, which is even more beautiful because you actually get people that'll say, hey, we'll pay $50 or $100 more if we get this. And I the first time I ever did this, I had 5 groups of people show up and I was there 10 minutes early and I got there and they knew they saw me drive up and they're like, you must be the owner. And I'm like, yeah. And then there's just like all these people in the street waiting. Well, that creates urgency that
it
you're
really
not,
does.
You're never going to get that if you do it whenever they want you to do it.
Sure. Well, Jason Reed, the Duplex Doctor, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thanks, Marshall.
Thanks a lot, Troy.
You bet.
It was a great show.
Awesome.
This has been the Troy Martinson Group Real Estate Podcast. Troy and his group are licensed real estate agents in the state of Minnesota with the brokerage RE/MAX Results. You can find them online at sweethomeminnesota.com. This show has been produced by Minnesota Podcasting, and they can be found online at mnpodcasting.com. The views expressed on this show are those of the individual participants and may not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of RE/MAX Results or Minnesota Podcasting.